Alrighty. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 3 of Newborn Libertarian. And you are welcomed in to our nerdiest episode. Well, if you can't hear that, this is going to be our special nerd episode where we are going to talk about Game of Thrones, specifically our most libertarian and non-libertarian characters in Game of Thrones. And, of course, who's on our episode to talk about this wonderful nerdy theme, we have
Thurman, Live Free or Die,
and Tim,
and Christian.
All right, everybody. So, how are we going to do this, Christian? You are the official smart one, so go ahead and tell us how we're going to do this roundtable nerd-tastic experiment.
Wait, why does he get to be the official intellectual?
Yeah, we didn't vote on this.
Hey, who's read the books the most?
You're white.
Check your privilege, sir.
I've read the books 3 times.
All right,
who's next in line after that?
Nerd alert.
Let's do Thurman, since he's all caught up on the show.
All right. Wait, so what do you want me to say?
Popcorn. You pick who goes after you.
Oh, Tim.
I'll go. I can go third.
So who will go fourth?
Who will go fourth?
Kim will go fourth. Okay, so how we're going to do this is we each kind of came up with a list before this episode of 5 Game of Thrones characters, or Song of Ice and Fire characters, that's the name of the book series, that are most like libertarians, and the 5 that we thought are the least like libertarians. And I think if we could start down at the bottom of the list, if that's okay with everyone, like the bottom, like go from your, 5 to 1 in each. So one of us will throw out a character who we think is like a libertarian. We'll start with is like a libertarian first, and then we'll move to the not like libertarians. And each of us will throw out a character, and everyone else kind of gets a chance to comment on that, whether they agree or disagree. And just a chance for us to nerd out of not only about liberty, but about a literature series that we all kind of enjoy. In full disclosure, a literature series written by someone who considers himself progressive and really exists in a fandom perpetuated by left-leaning people, so to speak. So, and I think there are also some misconceptions about what a libertarian is and which characters they think are like libertarians. And so it's kind of a chance for us to have our little insight on it. And for those of you who don't know what Game of Thrones is, it's an epic fantasy series that's still not finished yet. And hopefully the author, finishes it before Mother Nature or Father Time comes calling. Basically, it's about a bunch of families in a feudal society struggling against each other to secure a position on the Iron Throne. And there are some other aspects to the story, but that's basically the gist of it. Not a lot of characters are libertarian-ish in this story. It's kind of hard to find because the author, Martin, tends to write in a very gray area between, they have good qualities and bad qualities. So this is what kind of makes the idea interesting. Would we consider this person a libertarian, But Thurman pointed out one time on Facebook, would Thomas Jefferson be considered a libertarian because he had some great ideas, but then he owned slaves. So it gives us kind of a chance to hash out these fictional historical characters. So I'm just going to go first here. On the bottom of my list, more of an honorable mention. So before I get to number 5, but I'm sure someone else will have my number 5, so I'll defer that one. Does everybody remember who Zaro, Zoa, and Doxos is?
No.
No. Season? What book?
The second book. Okay. Second season.
Very vaguely.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know, or your show only, he was the person that Daenerys stayed with while she was in...
Now I remember.
And what is it? Karth.
I remember. Yes.
Zaro, Zoa, and Doxos took them in and let them stay at their house for a little while. And he was a very successful tradesman. And
was he the big black dude?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
that guy.
Was him.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Okay, so in the show, he's definitely more of a bad guy than he is in the books. In the books, he's more kind of an indifferent character. He may or may not have been a pedophile, so that's a knock against him. But he was homosexual, believe it or not. Daenerys always seems to make... notes about what he seems to be attracted to. He kind of seems indifferent to the whole war aspect of it. And when Daenerys eventually comes to hold power in Meereen, he shows up and says, hey, you know, why don't you just go to Westeros, leave us all alone, and let us trade with each other? And he's definitely what I would consider an early capitalist, because he kind of started from nothing as a slave, and he built up his influence and power through trade, eventually becoming the man he was. So I can't remember whether or not he was in the slave trade. If he did, that kind of, you know, knocks him down on my list by a lot. But does anyone else have anything to say about Zorro?
I did think he was a very interesting character. I don't know if in the show they really go into a whole lot of depth with him. And I'm still about maybe one third of the second book, so he'll come around pretty soon for me. But yeah, it'll be interesting to read more about him.
Anybody else have anything to say about Zorro? Thurman shaking his head. No. Okay, so let's move on. Thurman, your number five most libertarian character in Game of Thrones.
Actually, can I do my number one? Because
no.
I feel like kind of like you said, I think no.
No, you can't. We gotta make them listen to the whole episode.
All right, I guess. Davos Seaworth.
Davos Seaworth.
Davos.
He's not even on my list, by the way.
Yeah, he's a good character.
He's on my list.
A lot of moral dilemmas.
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, that's why I picked him. For the most part, I mean, it was kind of hard for me, besides like three characters really were like, all right, they're definitely libertarians, but they're definitely not libertarians. But mainly because he released that gentry kid that was supposed to be sacrificed. I thought that was very libertarian of him, you know what I mean?
And not only you're speaking from in the show, in the books he released a different character. He was another of King Robert's bastards, but wasn't as prominent. But he did so at great risk to himself and suffered a lot personally.
Yeah, it was treason.
Because he committed treason to save this one person, and you know, and Melisandre said, what is the life of a boy against everyone else? You know, he said everything. I think that's a very libertarian quote from him. And for those of you who still don't know, a libertarian, I guess, would be defined by the non-aggression principle, basically, don't steal, don't take people's stuff. And he was actually on my list for those reasons and for the reason that I like that he was a smuggler before he was in Stannis' employ. So, you know, those weren't the king's onions, those were his onions, and he didn't have to pay a tax on them if he smuggled them. So I think Davos is an excellent example of someone who would be considered a libertarian.
Well,
any other thoughts on Davos?
I have nothing else to say.
Tim's good. Kim, you're good on Davos?
Yeah, I have my guy next if you guys want
to. Okay.
I like Peter Baelish.
What?
I do. I think he ultimately is just trying to improve his status in the world at any means possible.
Kim, you have something to say about that?
There's going to be some dissension because he is on my not libertarian list.
He's on my non libertarian list too.
I mean, he plays the game, but I think he ultimately knows that he has no choice.
Mm-hmm. No,
always a choice, Kim, right?
He's the only problem is he thinks he doesn't have a choice, but the thing is his choice is to be made so he can pretty much play into the hands of the people who he thinks has the power, because the people who have the power right now are people like the Lannisters, the people who are doing things for their own good, and he just wants to be on their side. But basically he's just kind of just trying to play the game to be in the hands of the people who have the power, whether it's pretty much for evil. And he's just kind of,
I wouldn't say he's all evil. He has this love for the Starks that is
a really creepy love.
It's
disgusting.
A little creepy, but other than the Starks, he's the only one who kind of
Well, Littlefinger kind of gets thrown in our face a lot when, you know, we go into the Westeros message boards, you know, oh, you libertarians love Littlefinger because, you know, he's the self-made man, business guy, but he's a perfect example because he screws everyone over and all this. But, you know, to me, Peter Baelish is less of a capitalist and more of a corporatist. So he kind of directly benefits from other powers above him giving him special privileges. And remember, he was the master of coin when Robert was king, and he was the one who allowed for this spending to go out of control and to put the crown in debt. So there's your likening to the Federal Reserve, you know. And people say, you know, maybe he is really good with money because he kind of is a businessman. He runs a brothel, so, you know, no value judgments there from a libertarian perspective. But perhaps his dealings with the money aren't as business-like, wherein, you know, cost and loss and profits and revenues and like that. Maybe he's actually diluting the money supply. You know, there's really kind of no evidence for this in the book, but in throughout history, in the book Don Quixote was kind of written about this and had some stuff in it about that. In old times, you know, when people had metal money or like gold, the king would sometimes call in all the gold to clean the metal. And what he would do is he would clip the coins, melt them down, and basically from the old coins, he'd create brand new coins and devalue the currency and hand them out to his friends. So maybe Littlefinger, you know, when the quote in the book says he rubs two dragons together and a third one appears, maybe he's not just good with money, but he's actually actively diluting the money supply. So Littlefinger is on my not libertarian list.
There's just something... I don't know. Like, it seems like his actions are for the good of...
The good of himself.
Yeah, but...
At the end of the day.
But
he's not on the Lannister side either.
Yeah,
definitely not.
It's just like, you know, you would like to think that he's trying to help people out. Like, even by the end of the current season, I'm not even sure he was even out for the good of Sansa. Like, it looks like it, but where she's being led right now, and you're like, I don't know where the good of anything is going for this. Like,
well,
tell me.
I don't think he knew about how bad Ramsay was.
Hell no, he knew. Totally no, knows.
Come on. When you put anybody in the hand, and don't tell me nobody would put Ramsay on their nowhere near libertarian list. That's like on the Satan's Child list is where Ramsay needs to be.
If I may make the connection, I really like Peter. He's one of my favorite characters. But honestly, I see him as a core intellectual, you know, what Murray Rothbard talks about.
Yes.
These guys who are leading the masses to do the will of the state. I see him as one of those guys, honestly.
So would be Varys, I think.
I agree with that on Varys. Littlefinger's one of my favorite characters, and honestly, out of everyone existing, I kind of want to see Littlefinger's plans win, you know, just because where he came from. And But I hate all the things he does and the people he puts through some of these things, and his treatment of Sansa, especially in the show, is... He's a despicable character, but he's definitely entertaining.
I mean, are the, you know, Peter and him, are they really, you know, despicable? I don't really think that they're per se evil people. They're just doing what's in their best interest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just see them as they're just really going along with the flow. And, you know, they both have these ties to almost everybody. You know what I mean? They're not really... Like, they pledge their loyalty kind of to these people, but as the dominoes keep falling, you know, they're still around. It's like, oh, yeah, I knew that was going to happen. Well, I'm going to move my money here, you know?
Well, because Littlefinger causes things to happen and moved his money there beforehand.
Yeah, okay.
I think Littlefinger is the best player of the game.
Well, he's playing the Game of Thrones better than most of the people. Sure. Playing those Game of Thrones real good.
Oh, yeah.
Who's not Cersei? Not at all playing it very good.
Yeah. Have we exhausted talks on Peter Baelish, or do we have more to say on Littlefinger?
Yeah, let's move on.
Okay. Yeah. So Tim had Littlefinger, and we're going to move on to Kim.
Oh, wait. We're still on the list of libertarian. I forgot. Wait.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've talked about Davos, we've talked about Zorro, and we've talked about Littlefinger.
I'd say on the bottom of mine actually would be Eddard Stark. And the reason I put him at the bottom, I still think he's got, I mean, he's not that great of a politician, really. But his problem, as we're talking about politician in the norms of, you know, what people think it would be today, because he spent all that time actually trying to seek out the dirt for Cersei instead of being like, come on, people, you can see it. She's totally screwing her brother. You can't see that crap? Everybody knows that crap. You know, he's took all that time trying to find out, looking through the books, looking through the histories, and like going, it's like dark of hair. We're like, oh my God, how many times you got to go through these things? Look, you know, look at all of his bastard children. We see this. And he went through all that, you know, all these times, like, he's just such an honorable human being, you know, he just, there's just something, you know, about him. He's got honor, and he just doesn't go out slaying people. You know, he's a family man. He's just got these morals. He's got some sort of code that isn't just about himself. And, you know, he's for his people. You know, he's not just a king going out slaying people. And to me, that, you know, somebody who's about his people, who's about actually gathering clues, going through histories, trying to figure out, you know, the right way to go about things. He's going and looking through the laws, trying to figure out things, trying to do things correctly and do them right. You know, he wasn't a perfect man, you know, but he wasn't going out saying we should just slaughter human beings just because. And even when he had to execute people for certain things, you know, it wasn't just going, I'm going to slice people's heads off for things. You know, that's, he does do some things that has me at the bottom of the list, but, you know, if you're trying to look at somebody who was a little more libertarian in this world of not so libertarian people, I'd have to put Eddard Stark at the bottom.
I'm going to disagree with you. And Ned Stark is actually on the bottom of my not libertarian list. And I kind of come to this, I see Ned as more of some kind of, you know, very dedicated religious conservative type of guy. And it doesn't come, you know, he's very high on tradition, and you're right, he's very selfless. He thinks of things in terms of his people, but that's kind of the mark of some kind of dedicated conservative. And what had it for me, which made me move him over to the not libertarian side, was when he actually executed the guy, whether it's the first season or the first book, because the guy saw the White Walkers or the others, depending on which medium you're watching it in. He didn't listen to this guy. No one listened to this guy. And the guy just wanted to get away. And honestly, if you think about practicality of the Night's Watch, you know, do you want a whole bunch of people who are absolutely terrified guarding the wall? You know, the guy would have run away anyway. It just you just picture Ned Stark sitting here. Picture him in the United States federal government today, and all these other states are, you know, legalizing marijuana against what the federal government says. You know, Ned Stark would have been the one. He would have hated it. But he still would have gone to those states to chop off people's heads because, you know, that was the law. I just think if Ned Stark was sitting here, nullification and jury nullification would be something he'd tear his eyes out over. You know, if the law says it's the law, he's going to do it. He doesn't really question whether the law is right or wrong. He just does it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Thurman?
He always kind of pictured me as kind of the conservative, just good statesman.
And his political acumen is like that of modern conservatives, too. Like his political skills. So, which means they're not very good.
Yeah, I did state he's not a very good politician. So
like
good point.
Most conservatives.
I think you guys put a lot more thought into all this than I did. Oh, is it my turn?
Yeah, go ahead. We'll skip my next one. Go to Thurman.
All right. Samwell Tarly. You guys know who that is?
Yeah.
One of the brothers of the Night Watch.
Yeah. If you don't know who is, man, Sam's awesome.
I think he's a libertarian because, honestly, I think he values life. You know, most people call him a coward, but I think he just values life, and I see that as the axiom of non-aggression, even though he is kind of in involuntary servitude. But, yeah.
I would agree. You know, I didn't put him on my list. I probably should have now that I think about it. And the things that, you know, he doesn't hurt people and doesn't take people's stuff. So that's kind of on the top of the list. And what he did for Gilly and the baby, you know, helping them against what everyone else said and, you know, willing to go learn for the benefit of the Night's Watch. He's also very selfless. And, he seems to be, you know, right now where he is at the books, he's kind of in the same boat as where he is in the show. At the books, he made it to Old Town, and he's going to learn how to be a maester. And already he kind of seems like he'd be at odds with the intellectual establishment. So I think that was pretty good, Thurman. I agree.
Yeah.
I need to start reading the books.
Yeah, Sam was actually on my list, too. I mean, that seemed to be a pretty easy one because, actually, if I come to think of it, I think he's probably the most libertarian of pretty much all of Song of Ice and Fire, actually. Because, I mean,
yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I think there's a good argument to be made for that.
I'm done.
Tim was going to say something.
Sam gets a lot of page time in the books.
Yeah, he's got a lot of his own chapters.
Yeah.
Really? Sometimes I feel like he's either a surrogate for Martin himself or a surrogate kind of for the reader. You know, he's kind of like the reader's eyes. You know, because we're supposed to be these nerdy people, and Martin thought he was some nerd, and we just kind of can't help but root for him. Libertarianish aside, just as from a literary perspective.
Right.
Tim, you got another one?
Let's think here. I was going to say Sam. I like Tyrion.
Oh.
I think we always end up rooting for him.
That one was real hard. Like, I couldn't even put him on either list.
Neither could I.
Yeah.
I mean, what he did to Shay, murdering her in cold blood.
I mean, it was fun for drama, but in real life.
She was a lying snake.
But in real life, awful.
Yeah. And then, you know, he does some more things in the books that didn't happen in the show. In the show, he's kind of whitewashed to seem better than he is in the books. But I couldn't put him on either list. But he's one of my favorite characters.
I think he's almost everybody's favorite character in, like, the land of TV.
But there's something to be said for him when he is the Hand of the King. You know, he's very – he does things for the benefit of people. You know, even though they can't go out and farm in King's Landing when Stannis is besieging them because he burns everything down and uses the mountain clans to do this and that, he kind of does everything when he's in power, not for the benefit of himself, but then once he gets exiled, he kind of turns into more of a selfish, revenge-driven drunk.
Right.
Did you have another one, Kim?
I actually had Maester Aemon on mine, the blind guy that eventually, I think he dies in this past season. The reason I had him on there, because I like that, I mean, he's the older brother of Aegon, who basically ascends the throne. Well, Aemon actually decides he wanted to forfeit the throne to his brother, and he goes to the Night's Watch and basically stays there. And it's basically just a mentor to the Night's Watch, and I just thought it was honorable because he just stays to his duty to be with the Night's Watch, which I think in that world is kind of important to be somebody who is dedicated to the group of people that guards the wall, and to forfeit, you know, the supposed glory of being the king, you know, being somebody that everybody serves, and you're just the man on the throne, and deciding, nope, that's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to serve the Night's Watch for the rest of my life instead of being the king. To me, it just seems like, you know, something, somebody who has their heads on the shoulder and says, look, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to serve the, you know, my people, keep them safe for the rest of my life is kind of, because when you go to the wall, that's your entire life. You already know you're dedicating your entire life to the wall in the cold is just says something about somebody's character to me.
I think that's a good one too. I can't disagree on that. I like how, you know, maybe Maester Aemon was the greatest abdication or non-acceptance of power since George Washington. So points for that one. Maester Aemon would agree is libertarian. And while we're on the Night's Watch, I've got Jon Snow as one of my libertarians.
He took my last one.
I think he's better on not hurting people and not taking their stuff than Ned Stark would be. You know, Jon Snow seems to have more of a inner conflict with himself when he has to do something. There was the one time he executed Janna Slynt, but I think we can all agree Slynt was a criminal.
Oh, he was awful.
And, you know, even though for the reason that he decapitated him kind of didn't follow some kind of due process and, you know, having to be at the wall as a conscription, Slynt didn't really have a choice. So that's the one negative thing I see against him. Before I go any further into Jon Snow, the Night's Watch in general, I was listening to the debate between Tom Woods and Austin Peterson about menarchy versus anarchy. And Austin Peterson, who I'm sure has never read these books, probably just watches the show, tried to use the Night's Watch as an example of menarchy. But I thought it was a pretty terrible one because, number one, they're kind of conscripted because they're all criminals. Number two, you know, whenever the wildlings do invade in history, they've been caught, you know, either asleep, and this comes from the book, and the wildlings get through anyway, and the Night's Watch arrives late to the party, so.
I always wanted to talk, I was hoping you'd bring this up, because I want to talk about this as a subject of whether the Night's Watch itself is a very libertarian thing, because you think about it, and I was also, before that, I was actually listening to, like, they have this YouTube series about, like, the history of the Night's Watch, and just thinking about it, it's like, great, so, you know, you're thinking about this heroic thing, like, it'd be a military, basically, you know, just to save the world from the whites and the White Walkers and all of that. I'm like, you got these group of people, they're, like, racist, like, the rapists, and I said racist, that's awful, rapists and criminals, and I don't think these people are sleeping, they don't care. You know, you got these people that are just, they're forced to go there. So what's so exciting about being part of the Night's Watch?
Well, they are racist too, because they hate the wildlings.
Yeah, that's true.
But in the beginning, I think, you know, before the Night's Watch kind of fell into disrepair, I think they were kind of libertarian because they were it was a voluntary thing, and there was great honor in being part of that. And you can see that in the North, from Jon Snow deciding to take the Black and Benjen Stark for whatever reason. Now, we don't know all about why he did that, but him deciding to take the Black and Jorah Mormont deciding to take the Black. So, and Maester Aemon. So in the upper echelons, there seems to be a very honor-stricken thing, and they tend to do very libertarian things. I guess, you know, Mormont didn't want to go kill all the wildlings, and, you know, one of the reasons I put Jon Snow on this list is because, well, one, he didn't kill Ygritte when everyone else thought he should have, and kind of let her go because she wasn't a threat anymore. And he went through great personal pain to bring the wildlings south of the wall. And if you're in the show and the books, he's in the same spot right now. It led to, spoiler alert, it led to ultimately his demise.
Yeah, and then if I'm remembering correctly, I could be remembering it wrong, and I guess it was also, like, they also made it super grandiose, like, this wall was super magical and all this stuff, and, like, it was super hyped up, and, like, old, like, Nanmor would talk about how it was super magical, and it was hyped up even more that, you know, great warriors used to fight on the wall, so it also had this magical lore to it, so, yeah, it might have been something even more exciting, you know, even better than it is now, but I guess it was not only just, maybe there were, you know, it was better before, more people would take the Black for honorable reasons, but there were also these stories and trumped up things that went along with it too. So not only was it maybe a little better years before, but it also had this lore that was also made up to make it look even better. So of course there's that history going on with it too.
So the Night's Watch, I think if we can agree that it started off kind of good and as a good libertarian ideal, kind of a voluntary thing for people to keep watch over the rest of the realm, and then it was slowly filled with criminals and people who abused it and did this and that for other reasons. You know, it's kind of like the Constitution and the United States government.
Yeah.
So to draw a parallel there, so, you know, it starts off as a good thing, but then becomes terrible.
Okay, sorry for that tangent. I just always wanted to talk to somebody about that.
I was hoping we'd get there too, because I thought that was interesting, you know, because they're even called the Night's Watch, and kind of the vernacular for minarchists, you know, they support a night watchman state. So the parallel is pretty, it kind of draws itself. Thurman, did you have another one?
Dario Naharis, or Dario.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dude. So honestly, he's my number one, you know, but I'm kind of thinking about it now. I probably should have, like I said, you guys thought about this a lot harder than I did. You know, like the Night's Watch, he has his own honor code, dude. Like, he will not sleep with women just for the hell of it unless they want to sleep with him too, and it's for love. And also, he will not kill anybody who's not trying to kill him.
Oh, I might disagree, though. He might say that, but in the show, he killed his other commanders who didn't want to join Daenerys. So he killed them, took their place in the rank and file, and then used his new power to move his company into Daenerys. So he's a he's a fraud and someone who breaches voluntary contract. So I didn't put him on my list, but of my non-libertarians, but I wouldn't consider him one. But even though I think he's super interesting, also he's entertaining. He's kind of Danny's bad boy fantasy.
Every girl has one, or the bad girl. I never had a bad girl list. I just was like, no, just no. Not a good idea.
I tried the bad girl a couple of times. It just never works.
No. Well, I mean, the bad girl is good in bed, and then I'm like, get the hell out.
Yeah, essentially.
How about Tim? You got one? Is Tim playing FIFA?
Why you say that? Because he's Brazil?
No, because he was playing FIFA earlier.
Oh, gosh, white people, man. So racist.
I think we might have lost him.
He might be up from his computer. Kim, do you have another one?
I'm here.
Oh, no, Tim's here.
I accidentally muted.
Oh.
Do you have one?
I don't, actually. My lack of time to make a list, yeah, it was a little hard.
Yeah. The other two I had, somebody else had, so.
Okay, so I've got three more that nobody mentioned. I've got Beric Dondarrion on my list.
Hmm.
Who was the captain of the Brotherhood Without Banners. You know, he was the guy that kept getting brought back to life.
That's all like shreds of himself.
Yeah, so he was the guy who King Robert sent to originally arrest, Ned sent out to initially arrest Gregor Clegane, who was the mountain who was pillaging across the Riverlands. And when King Robert died, he kind of didn't pledge allegiance to any king. And eventually, you know, him and his company became the Brotherhood Without Banners. You know, they didn't have a side and just decided to protect the small folk. And they did it. They protected the small folk from the Lannisters and the Starks. So from the readers, we kind of think the Starks are the good guys, but Martin does a good job of showing us how they're not necessarily the Starks are the good guys, because war hits all innocents and both sides do a lot of harm. And Beric Dondarrion was kind of, and his group of people, of outlaws, basically vigilantes, stood up for the people in the face of government on both sides.
Government is always evil.
And he always gave people due process, you know, even if it was a trial by combat's not really due process, but at least he heard out the hound before he decided to fight him.
All right. I do have one more libertarian. Bronn, the sellsword.
Good old Bronn.
Yeah. For the most part, I mean, he's somewhat of a good guy. I mean, maybe he's not like full-on libertarian, but he's definitely a capitalist.
Yes. If nothing else, I would say that about Bronn.
And he does want the good life in the end. You know what I mean? He wants to settle down, have children, and like not pick up his sword anymore.
And that's in the show, they kind of used him a lot because he was such a popular character. But in the books, he kind of retired, married the girl. He just does this, and he does it so he can cash his paycheck and go home and live his life.
Yeah.
You know?
He's just offering his services to whoever has money.
And the one thing I would say was when Tyrion asked him if he would, you know, kill a baby without a second thought, he would say, well, no, how much? So he's not, but from what I know, he's not killed a random baby. So from what we can tell in the evidence in the books, I say, yeah, why not?
All right, I'm done.
I should have brought this up while we were up north. The guy who's number two on my libertarian Song of Ice and Fire characters was Mance Rayder.
Don't remember him.
The king of the wildlings.
Yeah.
All right. This dude, basically, he was in the Night's Watch, and then he abandoned the Night's Watch. So, number one, he's a deserter. It's kind of muddy on that, because he was found as a baby by the Night's Watch, kind of raised in the Night's Watch, really had no other choice growing up. So he decided he was going to be in it, and decided that wasn't for him. They wouldn't let him, you know, express himself the way he wanted to. So he just, you know, left, only to unite the wildlings. And some people, you know, in the beginning of the story, you think it's just so that he can become a king and launch an attack on Westeros and this and that, but it's really more to get away from the others. And the wildlings call themselves the free folk. And, you know, he didn't coercively bring all these tribes together. He's kind of said, look, I've got a plan. Who wants to follow me? And the free folk followed him. And even in the face of Stannis saying, you know, kneel and I'll let you live, kneel and I'll let you live, he's like, no, I'm not doing it. And especially in the show, when he says, you know, if you have to ask me why they won't follow me, and why it doesn't matter if I kneel to you, then you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know anything about us. And I think he hit the nail on the head. I think Mance Rayder is the freest character.
Definitely.
And he does not, you don't tread on him, and he doesn't, he bows to no one.
Definitely. Definitely agree.
Tim, any thoughts on Mance?
Yeah, I liked him. I definitely agree with pretty much everything you just said. It'll be interesting to see where it kind of goes with it.
You know, honestly, now that you mentioned him, I think about it, I think he might be the most ethical character in the entire series, honestly. He stayed with it. You know, he chose death over life, over bowing, over taking the knee. Definitely, I think.
Kim's just joining us again. We're talking about Mance Rayder.
Sorry about that.
Any thoughts on Mance? Mance was my number two.
You know, I thought about putting him on the list because, you know, I was just thinking, well, you know, with the, I mean.
He's not on your list? What? He chose death by fire?
Yeah, I know. That I was like, because, you know, well, just the fact of why he changed paths, like, in his life. You know, I was thinking with his path over Sam as my number one. I don't know why I just left him off the list entirely, especially between him and Sam. I don't know why the heck I did it. I don't know, maybe I hit backspace like an idiot, but between him and Sam, I would say maybe they should have been between my number one and two.
We good on Mance?
Yeah.
All right. So my number one, this is a character that's not been in the show yet, but he will be this season. Nothing spoilery. He was in the books, Septon Maribald. Do you remember who he was, Kim?
Yeah.
So this guy is a priest of the Seven, and he goes around the Seven Kingdoms, and he devotes his life to kind of teaching, you know, his faith and other things and giving to the poor. You know, he walks everywhere he goes, and, you know, you look at this map of Westeros, it's supposed to be like as big as South America. He walks everywhere he goes, sometimes barefoot, and he just gives things away to the poor. And he gives this, and kind of it's Martin speaking through him, because the books are really have a really strong anti-war theme running through them, how, you know, war might benefit these people at the top, but ultimately it's the people below that pay the price. And Septa Maribald gives a brilliant speech while he's walking through the Riverlands, telling about the destruction that both sides do, and war really doesn't help anybody. And I think if we're going to be libertarians, it's the number one thing we have to oppose is war, especially aggressive war. So I think he's my clear-cut number one.
I have no arguments with that.
No arguments. No arguments against the Septon.
Even though, you know. I'll still pick Sam as my number one.
All righty. If no one has any more top five libertarians, now is the fun part. We can rail against other characters we have a personal bias against and found a reason to put on this list. We can complain about them, call them bad people, maybe in stronger terms. But who wants to start with their number five or lowest ranked least libertarian character?
My number five was Varys, but we already talked about him.
Well, we talked about him more in Littlefinger, so expand on Varys for us, if you would.
Well, specifically because, you know, he claims that his loyalties are with the realm, you know, and that really sounds like a court intellectual would say, or just somebody who is of the state, you know what I mean, just somebody in government. Oh, like, my loyalties are with America. I mean, if you don't do this, then you're not a patriot. Like, that's just kind of where I felt that.
Yeah, I would agree. Because half the time he does say that, but where's the proof that it really is? Because, you know, he kind of just appears. And you're like, okay, your loyalty is where? You just kind of appear out of nowhere. And I'm like, where? Are you sure? Are you sure? Because, you know, he's that person you forget about. And he's like, oh, I have my little birds everywhere. I'm like, what? What? I don't ever really see. What are you talking about? So it doesn't ever seem like there's proof that his loyalty is with everyone, really.
Yeah. I don't think I didn't put Varys on my list, but I definitely think no. You know, when you hear, oh, it's for the good of the people, the good of the people, but then everything kind of ends up selfishly benefiting you. It kind of seems like some, you know, it's a very left kind of mentality. Oh, for the good of the people. And then it doesn't really benefit the people and you see nothing, but then they just constantly tell you. And he, you know, he never really does anything wrong that you would think, but you just kind of, I just kind of get the feeling that he's in it for himself. And Kim and I have read the books, so we kind of know a little bit more than what's been revealed on the show. And maybe that whole plot will be cut entirely.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he may or may not have connections with the slave trade. And if he does, it's a very, very grotesque kind of connection. So
yeah,
that's Varys. Kim, do you have someone?
Let's see. We're starting at the bottom. I'd say maybe Melisandre. Mainly
okay.
Because, I mean, she's definitely evil, but I think her evil lies in the fact that she thinks, like, you know, where you have the people that knowingly use religion as a persuasive tool, and they know it's not, like, you know, they know it's not true, but I have a feeling that Melisandre kind of knows some of it is not truth, but at the same time, she still believes there might actually be some truth to her beliefs, and I think she's starting to realize there might not, she might be losing it, I think, at the end of the season, that there might be a little something missing, that maybe she might be wrong, but I feel like that might be, like, the worst kind of, one of the worst kinds of people is somebody who's been using religion to manipulate people, but still might actually partially know she is manipulating people and might be wrong and start to find out, oh, shit, I might really be wrong.
And the whole burning children thing.
Oh, that was awful. Yeah, that's why she might have shot further up my list, but I think those are people who are just outright horrible that are passing her up.
Yeah, and it's very... What she does and her rationale behind it is very anti-libertarian. You know, even if this is for supposedly, if it's for the good of the 99, you know, the one person has a say in whether or not he wants to be sacrificed or not. You know, this very anti-libertarian. And I didn't put him on my list, put her on my list because there are just so many. And I kind of wanted to fit Ned Stark in there just to spark a discussion. But there are so many terrible people, but Melisandre definitely is not libertarian.
There's like seven on my list or something.
Yeah. If we're on the religious side of that, though, I want to throw the High Sparrow in there.
Ah, you took another one off my list. He's like four.
You know, when, you know, you kind of had your Ned Stark moderate conservative where he believes in the good of the people and he tries to do his best, but, you know, at the end of the day, the law is the law. And then you have the High Sparrow, which is basically what would happen if Donald Trump became president. or it seems like the people who follow the High Sparrow are the same people that follow Donald Trump.
Okay.
You know, they go through the place, you know, hyper-religious, and they break everything, and you can't do this, and you can't do that, and just very, you know, the... What would Kim? What would the LGBTQ ESPN ABCDXYZ community have to say if the High Sparrow had his way?
Uh oh.
Is Kim gone?
Yeah,
she left
totally.
Her chair. She totally left her chair because she knew where that was coming. My acronym.
Honestly, I would want to be the leader of the guys who are going to kill them because I just have this unruly hatred for religion in general, and fuck those guys is how I feel about it.
Yeah, I don't like the sparrows at all.
There's always a creepiness factor when they throw religion in, especially in the series.
Well, it's kind of the parallel to, you know, even though the faith of the seven is supposed to be the parallel to the Catholic Church, their devotion to religion and religious tyranny and religious extremism is kind of a nice parallel to what you see, you know, out of the Islamic terrorists. And that's what's kind of so scary about them, is that they're willing to die themselves and do whatever it takes to cause mass carnage. And there are people like that in every religion throughout history, but I think that's another reason that makes them so scary, is that they're not in it for themselves.
You know, I will say, though, you know, even though I just said I have a hatred for religion, I do, I almost find it, like, really noble and honorable that these people of various religions are just so, I can't say, you know, I can't say that they're devout followers. Maybe they're just followers, but, you know, they believe so much, they're willing to give their lives for the cause. I think that's just a noble thing in general, but not when it's done, like, against other people and in harm of other people.
Yeah. I can't stand the High Sparrow. Tim, do you have one?
I don't.
I keep waiting.
We're talking about people. I mean, Tywin Lannister is pretty
awful.
Pretty evil. Yeah.
He's my number one.
Is he?
Yeah.
Whoa, man. Really?
You are just not supposed to like this guy from the get-go.
I mean, I thought we were all going to agree with who's the worst, like, non-libertarian.
Well, save it. Save it, Thurman. Thurman, you go last.
Yeah. We'll save it. We'll save that.
So Tywin Lannister, Tim brought up. Kim, what do you think about that?
Tywin?
Yeah.
Well, he's, like, what annoys me the most is that he's the type of person who, like, the family head who says, you know, he does what is good for his family, but what's good for his family is exactly what he thinks it is, and he's just the authority on everything. And he also knows exactly who is part of his family, which, of course, excludes Tyrion. And he's also that person who likes to be ignorant of all of the terribleness that's going on in his life, like, oh, his you know, twin children banging each other, and he's just the kind that just wants to ignore the things that's going on around him, and he's just the kind that just the corruption around him, he just lets it just, he doesn't do anything about it. He lets all of this evil and wrong just kind of simmer, and just the worst kind, and still tries to rule with all of this obvious corruption going on around him. And it's just, I don't know, it's just the awful, and just turns a blind eye to it, and then still tries to rule like he should have some sort of respect, and just tries to rule with the violence and just, ugh, just the worst kind of, ugh.
Yeah, that the bombing of Doctors Without Borders at the hospital is, I can picture Tywin Lannister in charge of that. They're like, but, you know, sir, there are kids and doctors and people in there. I don't care if someone that I don't like is in there. Burn them all.
Yeah.
That's a very Tywin thing to do. You know, if he existed today, I could definitely picture him as one of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, or, you know, heading up or sitting in the NSA, just the wickedest of the wicked you could imagine. You know, Tywin's in charge of that.
Okay.
So I'm waiting for someone to bring up a certain character, and I want to know if anyone can guess who I'm thinking of.
The Hound.
I wasn't necessarily thinking of the Hound as a non-libertarian, but
Ramsay Bolton.
He's probably my number one, is what you're thinking of.
Did you say? Wait, say what? Did you say that sentence again?
I said you're probably thinking of my number one. Is he of the Bolton family?
No.
Okay.
No, see, I didn't put Joffrey or Ramsay because it was too easy.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, they're kind of more psychotic.
Yeah.
I had Khal Drogo. Who else?
Drogo's a good one.
Is it one of the Baratheons?
Oh, gosh. Like, another Baratheon? I pretty much had every Baratheon, even Stannis.
Yeah.
You know, Renly wasn't so bad.
Well, I thought what was bad about Renly is just, you know, going off, I'm the true king, you know, all the people who went off, tried to split off, say they were all the true king, got on my nerves, even like, you know, Rob, I'm like, come on, guys.
Oh, I wanted to bring up Daenerys.
You know,
that's definitely non.
My mom is all about the, Daenerys, and every woman, every like feminist probably wants to go out and say Daenerys. I'm like, I just, even in the books, like, you know, I wanted Daenerys to be like the coolest ever, but her story seems to like have gone off and faltered. When she started, she's like that ruler that you wanted to, you're like, all right, she's got dragons, it's going to be awesome. But then she goes off and starts pillaging, going to other villages and starts to try to rule them, you know, like going off into Syria and stuff like that, and going off in other places. You're like, maybe you should worry about going home. Maybe sometime, huh? Maybe you should not try. Maybe go home. You think about that sometimes instead of trying to rule these other places and civilize them or whatever you're trying to do. Maybe you stop doing that, and then all the slaves are like revolting. They're like, maybe we want to be slaves all of a sudden, but no, you shouldn't be slaves. But maybe we want to.
Yeah. I mean, Daenerys' saving grace is that she did liberate the slaves. But then in the second part, you know, when she's ruling in the book and in Dance with Dragons, it gets into the economics kind of the fighting pits.
Oh, yeah.
And she, even though all these former slaves want to work and fight in the fighting pits to make money, she won't let them. And she puts price controls on because, you know, talking about how the slaves were freed, but then the masters would only pay them a certain amount. And because they were under the amount of money, she said, no, that's too cheap to hire them. It was illegal in Meereen to hire them. It was like the first minimum wage price control, which was a terrible thing. You know, all these slaves are wanting to say, hey, you know, no one's paying us anything. Let us go back to what we were doing and earn a little money.
Oops,
and Danny's like, no, it's not fair. So economically, she's a little bit better than Bernie Sanders.
Damn.
And her whole claim to power, though, you know, say she does go back to Westeros, but say Westeros is in a good spot for whatever reason, and she gets back and no one really wants her. Is she going to use her dragons like nuclear weapons and say, I am the queen? You know, her whole
and
especially like in the books, her whole claim to what anything is, you know, her family and fire and blood, and she'll take it if she doesn't get it. So she's
revenge.
Yeah, or revenge. So, you know, I actually didn't put her on my list, but I thought because she's such a central character, you might as well discuss her.
You know, and the fact is, like, the most not so super, like, nowadays feminist thing for her to do, I guess, coming back is to come back and marry somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah, she starts off with this, I don't need anybody to, I want somebody.
Yeah. Well, her story, even in the books, has just been written, like, I think into a corner right about now. Because,
yeah.
Like, she, I think at this point now, she's, like, what, hanging out on some island where, like, I guess she gets reunited with a dragon. And she just kind of.
And then the Dothraki show up again.
Yeah, so it's really odd. Like,
but that whole thing with Meereen's about to get really interesting in the books, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really, really interesting.
Really interesting, so.
All right.
Like, if you can just imagine, like, a whole lot of fireworks going off in a sewage factory, that's how interesting. Like, like a sewage factory explosion. That's the amount of stuff that's about to hit the fan.
I guess this will be George R.R. Martin calls, he's written himself into, like, a Meereen's Knot or something.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm probably going to read that book in less than a week when it comes out, just because of all the exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's going to come out, and I'm going to be, like, 42. When it happens.
Is he confirmed he's, like, currently writing the books?
Oh, he's writing them.
Yeah, sure. He's been writing it for a while.
I think they'll be out before the next season starts, but I'm an optimist.
Really? The next season's, like, April 13th, like, the day after my birthday. Oh, the next... Yeah, the next season is April 13th, day after my birthday. So he ain't got enough time, man.
Well, see, I think he is, and I think he does have enough time because all the foreign language translators have begun. They've said they've started working on some stuff. So,
all right,
maybe there's more done than what they think, or he's going to cut some of it out, or
holding you to this.
I think it. Yeah, $5. $5 says it'll be out before next season.
All right.
Okay.
I'll put money on it. But I had one more character also. I love these books so much. The Faceless Men, I had them number two, just as an entity.
Oh, they are so awful.
Just, so you know, they're awful. So cool and mysterious and Batman-y or what is it that Ra's al Ghul heads up? Like the League of Shadows?
Yes, yeah.
I get that type of vibe from them. But, you know, taking payment to kill someone, Not cool, dude.
Is that what they do in the books? Because that's not really anything going on in the show.
That's because they're ruining it in the show. I'm like, they're making the Faces of Men the most terrible. Like, I mean, it's awful in the books, but they're not doing such a justice in the show. The books make it seem cooler. I mean, it's still awful in a libertarian sense, but it's much more interesting in the books.
Yeah. Go on, Thurman.
Oh no! I was just gonna say I've been wondering what's been going on. Like, you know, where are these bodies coming from? Where are they going? Like, we just don't know much of anything in the show at all.
I didn't think they were gonna go there with the room of faces in the show.
That was cool. That was a cool scene.
Yeah.
But I'm just waiting. I really want Arya because, you know, you would really want Arya to be a libertarian. But I'm like, she doesn't have the temperament to be a libertarian at this point.
Another revenge story.
Yep.
Yes.
But I just want Arya to be telefaces, man. You know what? F you guys. You guys are crazy. I'm Arya Stark. Screw you.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to be there for long.
No.
But in the books, going off the discussion or the judging them as libertarians or not, the faceless men in the books, they're up to something, and they're up to something more than just taking money to kill people. They're definitely involved. Because, you know, how they made the friendly man or the leader of the faceless men in the show, they made him Jaqen. Well, there's reason to mm-hmm. believe that Jaqen is someone else and somewhere else in the books, and we've seen him again up to something.
Jaqen Hargar, definitely not a libertarian.
Yeah, but they're interesting.
All right, you guys ready for my number one?
Oh, yeah, I've not said it. I'm ready.
Ramsay Bolton.
Yeah. Awesome.
I think he is, like, the most, like, I don't know. I just think he's the worst guy in the entire series, dude. Not only did he flail, what was his name? Greyjoy. Not only did he flail him, dude.
Reek, his name is Reek.
He changed his entire personality. Changed him as into a creature. Changed his identity.
He's a Bolton now.
Yeah.
He was originally a Snow.
Yeah.
No, he was. He was a Greyjoy.
No, Ramsay.
I thought you were Ramsay. Well, Ramsay was a bastard.
Yeah, but he was legitimized.
Yeah, yeah, his dad decided, you know what, I'm going to change you. I'm going to legitimize you.
Man, I mean, like, you know, like, it's just, I love the whole psychological thriller he's got going on. Like, honestly, that scene where there was those two girls with Greyjoy, and he thought, like, he was about to escape, and, like, he thought he was about to have sex with these girls, and he's like, nah, psych, I got you. I'm going to take this. You know, like, oh, that was crazy. And then he raped, what's the old girl? I forgot.
Oh, that's all, name. Yeah. And I just, I think he's, that's why he would be, oh, sorry, I'm interrupting your number one, sorry, I'm being a jerk.
I'm done. I mean, I just think he's horrible. I think he doesn't care. I don't know, only person he respects is his father, honestly.
I don't even think he respects his dad.
Well, I think,
I think his dad's scared of him.
Well, I think the only reason he would even pretended to be respectful is because he knew that was the only person who could legitimize him. And then now that he's got some sort of authority, because the reason I picked him as my number one is because he's the perfect example of what turning somebody into exactly what's not libertarian. Like, he takes Theon Greyjoy, who also is nowhere near a libertarian, but he takes everything away from Theon that a libertarian wants, like all aspects of property. He takes his identity, turns him into Reek. Takes him, you know, like, this guy doesn't even have his lands anymore because now he has no penis. His dad's all like, you know, he sends Theon's penis to his dad in a box, and it's like, I have no son. So he takes away his land property, his identity. Damn. He's made him into a creature. He's a slave. He turns him, like, he takes everything away from this man. This guy doesn't even know, like, who he is. Even when people, like, Sansa's trying to say, you know, you're Theon Greyjoy, he's like, no, I'm Reek. He takes everything from him. He is, like, everything a libertarian ever wants. Like, he takes it all. It's all gone. So, to me, that is somebody who's just taken it all.
I agree. He's too easy, though.
Yeah, easy for me. He's too easy, but I just figured if, you know, there's somebody on the, that's listening to the show that's a newborn libertarian, it's just the perfect example of taking everything away. Now, that's taking something away, but, you know, if you're trying to talk about, you know, something more complex, somebody else can take that away, now that I've already given my number one.
Yeah, Ramsey, you know, I kind of enjoy him as a character a little bit more in the show than I do in the books, and I enjoy him in the show better than I do Joffrey, but in the books, Kim knows, he's terrifying. Mm-hmm. He's not the funny kind of Rumpelstiltskin evil bad guy, you know. He's less mischievous, and he's more just out of his mind, crazy psychopath, like worse than Joffrey. Joffrey was just a kid that needed a spanking. I mean, mm-hmm. he was terrible in his own right, but, you know, when Joffrey was a snotty-nosed brat, Ramsay is a pathological criminal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Textbook psychopath.
How long have we been going in this one?
We are now about an hour in.
Okay. Dang. Do we want to go ahead and wrap up or kind of give a give the topic for the next episode?
Well, you know, I thought we were going to get more than do the Game of Thrones. And when last week we said we were going to do the whole egalitarianism thing.
That's what I thought we'd do next time.
Okay. Yeah, we can do that. I had, like, stuff to say, like, more stuff on Rockbird and, like, just economics and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, egalitarianism.
You said you.
Yeah. Egalitarianism and against liberty or the versus liberty, that definitely needs to show by itself. There's just so much to do with that.
Yeah, completely agree.
So we've got that one, and I'm going to try to get my other friend on for that one because that was something that he kind of had some questions on, so that'd be kind of cool to have him on. He kind of has been listening, I guess. And then after that, Kim, do you want to try to get Amy on?
Oh, yes. Yes.
To do a from a feminist perspective, one of the members of the Jason Stapleton program group, she calls herself a feminist but not a feminazi, so that'd be kind of cool to get – you know, her views on things. Tim, you still with us?
Still here, buddy.
You want to do an episode on FIFA?
Yeah. Wow. Oh, my God. They're corrupt to the bone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I used to listen to this podcast called The Total Soccer Show, and I definitely tuned in when they were talking about Sepp Blatter and when they were talking about, he was supposed to step down or something like that after, like, the recent stuff was going down. I never actually caught up to all of the corruption that was going on with that, but it was interesting.
Okay. Right. Does anyone have anything or any questions kind of not pertaining to egalitarianism versus libertarianism or feminism? Because we got those two topics coming up. Any kind of general questions about liberty or something that our viewers might want to know, have clarified, or before we head off real fast?
Yeah, I think I clarified all the questions I had, honestly.
Do we want to even talk about anything current going on?
That's what I thought, and I wanted to try to check out LibCompass again, but if it's still not on – oh, here we go. They're back online. Let's pick out an article. Let's pick out an article here. I'm just browsing through. Extreme poverty worldwide has plummeted as market economics spread, of course.
Oh, you know what? I did want to say, Christian, I read your, the little thing you posted on the Jason Stapleton program.
Yeah.
Your essay, dude. I read that. I want to say congratulations. I want to say that at the beginning of the episode so everybody can hear it, dude. Yeah, dude, you're inspiring me. I don't know if I'm ready to give up because I definitely want a college education. I definitely want to be a scientist, but you're inspiring me, dude.
Aw, as
well,
it should be.
Well, we can go into that on another episode, I guess, too. Maybe I'm more of an economics type of episode. We've got more of a kind of ethical schedule coming up, you know, with
word.
Egalitarianism, feminism. We'll have to do one for economics. And while we're on that, let's see. So on our economics episode, I guess we can get into that. We can also get into, I was thinking we can get into Austrian business cycle theory.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that'd be good.
Because I know when I first came to libertarianism, you know, I got classical, classical economics was what I was taught in for my first class. And only went into a little bit about the Federal Reserve. So even for new libertarians or newborn libertarians, you know, why the Fed is not a good idea or central banking is not a good idea or harms the economy is kind of foggy for new people to get into. And I still sometimes have trouble with it, especially if they say something that they've seen, you know, on or heard on a Jason Stapleton program or Tom Woods program. And they say, oh, you know, yeah, we should end the Fed. But then someone who also knows a little bit about it comes back and says, well, they help us stabilize the economy and this and that. It's kind of hard for them to defend if they don't know the ins and outs of why it's wrong. So, and that's something that I am still into and looking at myself. Does anyone else have any podcast ideas?
Maybe you guys could do an episode on the different schools of economic thoughts. So I was researching that, and there's like
that'd be a good one.
There's 30 different economic schools of thoughts.
At least.
Yeah, definitely over. So I mean, I was reading up a bit on like Islamic economics and Chicago School of Economics today. So kind of trying to get my head around that. So
okay, so. What we got coming up, then we got egalitarianism, then we got feminism, and then we can just do an economic special where we can just dive in and get a whole bunch of crap that people would like.
All right.
And also, if you're listening and you've not left a review, or we want to thank you guys for downloading. We're getting a lot of downloads in this first week, and it makes us feel good and want to come back on and do this again. But if you have any suggestions, go find us on Facebook. Kim, what's our Facebook and Twitter?
All right, Facebook, you can just search us out, Newborn Libertarian. You want to go to Twitter, it's at Newborn Liberty. And if you want to send us an email, you can go ahead and send that at newbornlibertarian@gmail.com. And also, even if you don't want to type anything out, you can always just you can pull out your phone and send a WAV file or whatever and attach it to an email at newbornlibertarian@gmail.com, whatever way you would like to send in input, comments, and since we're on iTunes, you can go there. You can rate us and also leave us some comments, good or bad. We like the good ones. But if you got to leave a bad rating, please tell us what you didn't like, where we could improve or whatever.
Excellent. And in honor of the topic today, you know, this is something that I love. I love Game of Thrones. I love Song of Ice and Fire. Again, those are books by George R. R. Martin, and the show is on HBO. It'll be back this April. Just as a fan of that, I wanted to encourage everyone to go check it out. It is the best fictional universe that I've ever seen and read. So I'm anxiously awaiting. Thank you, Mr. Martin, for writing that and giving us something to talk about and giving us a good topic for this episode. So
agreed.
In honor of Game of Thrones and the season coming up, let's go around one more time and we'll have everyone make one prediction for something that'll happen this season. Thurman.
Oh, man. I think Sansa's going to die.
Sansa's going to die?
Yeah.
All right. Thurman says Sansa's going to die. Kim?
I'm going to go, nope, Ramsay's going to die.
Kim says Ramsay's going to die. Tim?
I think Arya will die.
Oh, my God. Ooh, just because.
That would make people mad.
Yeah, just because he likes to make us mad, she will probably be the one to die.
She's always cutting close.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess we're going to go with people that are going to die. Cersei Lannister is going to die next season.
Oh, great. Now she's not because we want her to.
God, we hope.
Yeah.
Oh, I think she's got to kick the bucket. So, Kim, why don't you wrap us up?
All right, guys. Well, thank you for joining us. And one more time, just because I like plugging. Once again, you can hit us up at Twitter at Newborn Liberty and email us, newbornlibertarian@gmail.com. Search us out on Facebook. Newborn Libertarian, and until next time, this has been your host, Kim, along with
Christian,
Tim,
Thurman, live free or die.
Catch you next time.
Alrighty.